Welcome to Summit Church. Here, we strive to be a church where you can belong long before you come to believe. At each of our locations, we worship together, learn and grow together, serve together, and form relationships around a common purpose, to inspire people to find and follow the way of Jesus. Join us in listening to this week's sermon.
Well, greetings to you all. I'm guessing that if you have been around Summit for a while, you see me up here, and your very first question is, how's the boat going? Well, thanks for asking. I appreciate that. The boat's going along well. I actually have a picture for you to show you the progress that we've made. We're a little bit stalled out because we have flooding in the shop on the boat, but this is the progress, and I hope in the next, you know, few years that she'll be ready to sail. But enough of that. Today, this week, we are focusing on Africa. We're focusing on our global partnerships. It's our chance to look at our vision through a global lens and to consider how God will have us live out His vision for our church in the global context. Now, be forewarned, today is not merely an update on what others have been doing, but it's an invitation for you to be personally involved. That's right, you who are busy, who are behind on budget, who have school, work, kids, you who are building a boat and would like to finish it before you die, you who have a list full of commitments and obligations, you and I who have 1,000 troubles of our own. It's an invitation for us who are already doing a lot of good. We're doing Rooted, we're tithing, we're serving in a care community, you're part of the PTA, you coach your kids' team, etc., etc. And it's an invitation not because those things don't matter, but because accepting the invitation to participate in God's global church may be exactly what you need in this season. So today, if you experience any objections at the outset, reasons that you would think this is for someone else, I would ask you to acknowledge those objections, the things that would say, I'm glad my church does this, but I don't have time, energy, or passion to engage as well. Acknowledge those things, but don't let them stop you from engaging in the invitation. When I was about 14 years old, I grew up in Minnesota, we lived outside a small town in Minnesota, and I went to the school in town, and one day we were in town. My mom was driving me, and it was winter time. I remember this, and we were driving, maybe running errands, maybe she was getting me from school. I'm not sure, but we're driving down the road, and I see something that was like nothing I'd ever seen before. Off to the side of the road next to this apartment complex, there's this kid on the ground and three or four other kids around him. They're about my age, and they were just beating on this kid. They're kicking him, they're punching him, they're stomping him. It was incredibly jarring. And I had this response that surprised me a little bit when I thought about it later. But you know, I urgently told my mom, like, stop the car, turn around, which she did, which I'm not sure, you know, that was a smart mom thing to do, or if she noticed what was happening. But she stops the car, and I get out of the car and I run towards what was happening. Now, what you should know about me at that age, at 14. I was about as tall as I am now, but weighed about 40 pounds less. I was basically bones, organs, and skin. There was no muscle on me. If I was, you know, flexing in the mirror like 14-year-olds do, I would have gotten more progress in measuring my elbows or my knees versus my thighs and my biceps. But I run towards what was happening, and I don't know what would have happened if the boys I was chasing hadn't run away, but they scattered. And, you know, maybe, you know, bullies are more cowards than courageous. It could be, you know, a number of things. I think it was really they just saw me running at them and thought it was a skeleton chasing them. But whatever the case, they ran away, and I helped this young man up. I didn't recognize him, though we lived in a small town. Got him cleaned up a little bit. He was, you know, crying and snot and all that, and escorted him safely to his apartment. And afterwards, as I thought, what was it that compelled me to do that? I'd never been in a fight before. I wasn't a particularly courageous young man. As I thought about it, as I thought about it as an adult, I think it was an early glimpse of how God has wired me. And maybe a glimpse of how we are all wired in some way to reflect His character. While an imperfect and incomplete picture of who we ought to be, as most of our good deeds are, in that moment, my natural, reflexive, irresistible response to being confronted with something wrong and tragic and seeing the brokenness in the world was to move towards it and to do something to make it right, to experience a compassion that leads to action. In Matthew chapter 14, we see a really interesting story about Jesus' life. It says, starting in verse 13 of chapter 14, when Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat to a private and solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. And when Jesus landed, he saw a large crowd, and he had compassion on them and healed their sick. Now, when Jesus heard about this, what he had just heard of was the death of his cousin, John the Baptist, the one who God had assigned with the purpose of preparing the way of the Lord. John the Baptist was Jesus' close relative. He was his partner in ministry, and he'd been beheaded in this weird political plot. And Jesus wanted to go and to grieve and to be alone. But the crowds followed, and he had compassion on them and healed their sick. It's interesting that when you look at Jesus' life, you see that so many of the occasions where he healed others, where he confronted what was wrong and tragic and broken in the world, where he experienced compassion that led to action, were actually the occasions that could be viewed as distractions for Jesus, especially if you view Jesus' life and ministry the way I did for a long time. For a long time, I viewed Jesus' adult life as basically this. He gathered followers to teach and train for ministry. He did miracles to prove his divinity. He died on the cross to take on the punishment for our sins. And he was raised to life to demonstrate his victory over sin and death. Now, all of that is true and correct. But I think for a long time, I ran the risk of seeing much of Jesus' everyday actions as tangential to his purpose, as extra credit, as bonus work. In other words, I would look at the passages like we just read and think, well, he was nice, he had superpowers, so he did. Extra credit. But I think we miss something with that view. We miss seeing that Jesus' central mission, the thing that led him to the cross, is the same thing that has him stop while he is on his way, has him put aside his grief to attend to the grief of others. Jesus didn't merely heal people because he had time on his hands while he was waiting to die. I think he healed people because the same compassion that led to action, which resulted in the cross, wasn't his job, it was who he was, all the time and in every circumstance. In other words, his compassion towards those suffering was not extra credit work. It was central to his ministry because it was central to the character of God. If anyone could have gotten a pass on stopping to help another, it was Jesus. If anyone could have said, I have more important things to do, it was Jesus. But instead, we see him again and again as you read about his life, stopping and helping. And I don't think it was simply because he could do that, but that he could not or would not do otherwise. Compassion that leads to action is too much a part of who he is. And I think he wants the same for us as his church. James, in his treatise on living out our faith, sums up faith lived out in this way. Religion that God our Father accepts is pure and faultless. The message reads, real religion, the kind that passes muster before God the Father, is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from becoming polluted by the world. To look after orphans and widows, the most vulnerable in that time and in many cases in our time, to look after them in their distress and keep oneself from being polluted by the world. That's the essence of what our faith lived out looks like. Unpolluted, unadulterated. And so we do that. We do it imperfectly, but we don't do it as extra credit work. Rather, we choose to live our life as a community in the same way Jesus lived his, always moving towards the cross and at the same time and from the same heart, demonstrating compassion that leads to action for the most vulnerable in our world. And we do that locally, in our own community, and globally as well. Locally, we focus on loving and serving the most vulnerable, primarily and particularly in the foster care system, and also in our local Title I schools. Globally, our heart for vulnerable children and families has taken us into Eastern Sub-Saharan Africa, namely in Ethiopia, Malawi, and Kenya. Now, before we talk about exactly what we do and what you're being invited into, I do think it's important to note a bit of our posture about how we go about engaging in those global partnerships. In living out compassion that leads to action, first of all, we take a long-term view of what it means to serve and love vulnerable children and families. Long-term problems need long-term commitments. In missions, we talk about it in terms of relief and development. Relief brings help in the midst of trouble. Development addresses why there is trouble in the first place. So we commit for the long haul. In most of our partnerships, it's been more than 10 years that we've been engaging in the work that God has called us to. The second thing that is important is to note that we always work in partnerships, recognizing that we can do more good when we're serving alongside and in support of those for whom our global ministry is their local ministry. It's their context, their challenge, their everyday life, their culture. You know, looking back on my wild flailings in aid of that young man who was being beaten up, I didn't know his circumstances. I didn't know why he was getting beat up. I didn't know the relationship dynamics that had caused that. I didn't know his family circumstances. I knew nothing about that. And I tried to help what I could, but I could only provide a little help in the moment because I didn't really understand what he was facing. Now magnify those differences to a global context. And you're talking about language and culture and history and worldview and all of those things. And it would be presumptuous for us to go try to make a difference there on behalf of vulnerable children and families alone, and to not look at what God is already doing through the local church. People who are living out their faith on behalf of the same vulnerable children and families in their community. We need to remember that having the right heart doesn't always mean that the right action results or that we're taking wise steps. In many ways, we have so much more to learn in global service than we have to offer. But we have learned that in partnerships, we can both learn and serve. And as a result, both communities are better. So we take a long view and we work in partnerships. And there's today three things that I would like to invite you into in engaging in our global partnerships. The first is to pray. And I don't mean pray in the like, I don't want to do anything else, so I'll commit to pray sense. I mean pray. Pray like it matters. Prayer is essential to God's work in the world, as it is mysterious. Michael often says, prayer is not all we do, but it's the first thing we do. And we need to lead in what God has called us to in prayer. Understanding that there is power in it, even as there is mystery. Years ago, and if you don't know, Brandy, my wife and I have adopted children from Ethiopia. All our kids are Ethiopian, in fact. And in one of our adoptions, we were, you know, plowing through the paperwork. We'd already been matched with our children. They were considered in special circumstances because it was a sibling group, and sibling groups are harder to find families for. Our daughter was a bit older, and that made it also a challenge. There's some other things going on, and so the courts in Ethiopia had said, yes, these kids are ready to be adopted. They'd approved everything at the highest level in Ethiopia. We were matched with them, and we were flying through our paperwork. Submitted it all in record time. We were ready to go. We were ready to go and meet our kids. And then one day, we find out that there was one signature that was needed in a regional office, the area our kids were from, for the adoption to be finalized. It had been pre-approved by the court pending this one signature. And for reasons we didn't understand at all, the person that was in charge of those signatures had decided for the time being to not sign off on any further adoptions. And we felt completely powerless. You know, I'd get on the phone with our adoption agency and I'd be like, I can go over there. I can maybe if I show up to the office. And they're like, no, that's the worst thing you can do. Just like there's nothing you can do. All you can do is wait. Felt helpless and powerless. All we could do was pray. But we prayed. We prayed in the midst of our powerlessness and realized that maybe it is our sense of powerlessness that draws us into prayer. Maybe that is where the power is. One day, about a month into this grueling waiting process, we got an email from our agency. They said, paper signed, you're good to go, buy your tickets. And before you knew it, we were in Ethiopia. With no understanding of what had happened and why now the paper had gotten signed. So we met our kids, we spent a little extra time there because we knew we'd be coming back to a wild and chaotic family. And so we spent a little extra time in Ethiopia. And our last day, when we were getting ready to leave, this woman walked in. And she introduced herself and she said she was the social worker in charge of our kids' adoption. And she said that every day she would go to that office that needed to sign the paper. And every day she wouldn't even get to meet with the person who signs the paper. It was the secretary who would turn her away. And every day she would get turned away. And all of her coworkers who had, you know, they had a huge caseload to handle. They're like, you have other cases you can tend to. There's other kids who are more adoptable. You need to prioritize your work otherwise. But this woman felt convinced that God had told her that she needed to advocate for these kids. She felt powerless to make a difference, but she had enough faith in God to obey what he was leading her to do. And every day she went, and every day she got turned away, day after day, week after week. One day, she was on her way to the office to plead again for the papers to get signed. Her coworkers had said, you know, don't bother. They got in a really bad car wreck. The car was totaled. She was banged up. The other passengers in the car were as well. And, you know, and everyone said, okay, we've tried today. We're going home. We didn't even make it to the office. But again, she was convinced that God had told her she needed to advocate for these kids. So she gathered herself. She went to the office. And that was the one day that the secretary that had turned her away every other day was out sick. And a new person was in her place, and she made her case to that person. That person let her see the official who signs the paper. She was able to make the case to the official, and the papers were signed. And as she was telling us this story, I thought, gosh, I think this is a view as if from heaven on how God works. Here we were in a place where we felt powerless, and all we could do was pray. And over here was a woman who felt powerless, and all she could do was obey. And God used that somehow in the great mystery of how he works to accomplish his purposes. It didn't decrease the mystery for us, but it did convince me again that there's power in how we pray. It is part of how we engage in God's mission in the world and his mission in our lives. So when I say I'm inviting you to pray, I'm inviting you to pray. To pray like it matters. If you go on Summit's website, well, and follow the links to our global partnerships, you can see the different partnerships we have and how you can pray for them. But I'm asking you to commit to pray, whatever else you do. Pick a partnership and pray for them every day for the next year. Pray that God will work mightily in them. The people we work with in Malawi and Ethiopia and Kenya, they face adversity every day. They live and work in incredibly difficult circumstances. On behalf of women and children who are in even more difficult circumstances. And they need our prayers. So pray like it matters. The second thing I want to invite you into in our global partnerships, we call sponsorship. In our partnership with I Care for the Nation in Ethiopia, we've been working with Aini, the director there, for more than 10 years, and she advocates amazingly for young men and women who are incredibly vulnerable to being exploited. They live in impoverished circumstances, often with not a full intact family. Sometimes it's just their mother or grandmother who is caring for them, and they have to scrape to get by every day. And that having to scrape to get by makes these kids vulnerable. And Aini, who is working a professional job, doing great things, God just broke her heart for these kids. So she had to do something. And so she started this ministry. And like I said, we've been partnering with them for more than 10 years, and it's amazing. And part of how we partner with them is in sponsoring children. It's a commitment to both be a part of the funding that helps train these children, helps train their parents for vocation, raises them up, disciples them, all of these things. Make sure that they are healthy, that they have access to medical care, all of that. And sponsorship is also a commitment to relationship, to be a voice of encouragement in the lives of kids. Now, the wonderful thing is, since we have been partnering with her for more than 10 years, when we first started, we're sponsoring kids. These are little kids, you know, cute, little, adorable kids. Now they're teenagers. We were there this summer and, you know, our team for the first time, it was our first time sending a team in several years. And we're like, what's it going to be like, you know, working with teenagers? We know how to work with kids, but how do we work with teenagers? And we had a person on our team who just did an amazing job of breaking the ice for all of us. And we just had a wonderful time with these students. But we learned about the challenges they face, how at risk they are of dropping out of school, how much pressure there is to just try to make some money now so that their families can be comfortable, how much pressure they face in their everyday life. And we've committed in our community to community partnership, which means if a kid gets sponsored there, it's because Summit chose to do it, because someone in our church family said, I'm going to sponsor that child. Well, those children are now teenagers, and over the years, as there's been churn in attendance and people have moved away and all of that stuff, we've found that right now there are 51 young men and women who need to be sponsored. And we're going to try to close that gap. And I would ask you and invite you to consider being a part of that. You can go on our website and link to the sponsorship. Follow the sponsorship links and choose a child and sponsor them, and I'd love for you to do that. But I do want to let you know, when you go to the sponsorship profile, you're going to see a bunch of young men and women who are dressed nice, who look healthy and happy. And that's because those who have gone before us have invested in their lives. And these teenagers, these young men and women, are at a critical point in life. The next 4 or 5 years, they'll either be established in establishing their own families, getting educational training, being able to provide in a way that they weren't provided for, or they'll continue a loop of poverty and destitution. They're at a critical point, and we want to invest in them. These children face incredible pressure every day. When they leave the sanctuary of the care point I Care for the Nation represents, every day they face challenges. Every day they face adversity. And it does so much when we stand up and we say, we are a part of your life. We care. We're going to invest in relationship. We're going to invest in making sure you have the resources and the training that you need. It's an amazing thing. So I would invite you to be one of the 51 people who will choose to sponsor and help us invest and continue the investment in the lives of these children. The third thing I want to invite you into is to join one of our teams that are going next summer. For us, our partnerships have always been led by relationships, not resources. When Jesus handed over his mission until he returns, he didn't leave it with a bank, he didn't leave it with a business plan, he didn't leave it with a government, he left it with a community of people committed to his purposes, a community that represented a new way to live, a new kingdom. We don't go simply because we can. In fact, many of us think we can't go, but we go because we know those relationships matter. And we choose to believe, we dare to believe, that God can use us, little old me and little old you. And that apart from our means, our status, whatever may prop us up here, when that is taken away, when we go somewhere else to serve the most vulnerable in our world, we believe and have experienced that God can use us. But I don't want you to take just my word for it. I want you to hear from a few folks who have gone over this last summer and hear from their experience as well. So here's the interesting thing about going. Oftentimes we go hoping to make a difference, and God does use our relationships to make a difference. But we also find, as we pour ourselves out for the sake of others, that we often gain more than we feel like we have offered. It's actually one of the most humbling things that we experience in missions, and one of the most healing. When I go, every time I go, regardless of the team that we're on, regardless of the partnership we're in, regardless of the work that we're doing, every time I go, I feel like God has healed me a bit. You see, I need to remember how big God is. And if I don't pull myself out of my world, my troubles, my whatever, then you know what happens? My view of God shrinks to the scale of my problems. And my understanding of my problems scales up accordingly. And I need to go and see how big God is. When we go, of course, we see there are big problems in the world. But we also get to see how big God is. And I need to see that. I need to see how big He is and how beautiful His church is in every context, in every way. This week is election week, and we have been bombarded with messages for weeks and months that the outcome of this election, whatever it might be, that everything hangs in the balance. That our world will either be okay or terrible. That we'll have opportunity or not. Whatever it might be. But when you go and you see that God can work in contexts where there is no hope for a good election, there's no hope for a government you can rely on, and you see that God still works, that whatever the problems a country faces, that God can work in the midst of that. Go look at your life, our jobs, our families, all of those things. We have challenges, we have obstacles, but God can work through it. And when you see that God can work through someone who has entirely different circumstances, but He's powerful to work good in their life, we can believe that God can work our life, and the healing continues. Or think about our church. I mean, we have an amazing, I love our church. But churches can get mired down in budgets and strategies and attendance and what we need in order to accomplish this. And when you go and when you see a church that meets in a muddy ditch and is thriving and where God is at work, you see that God doesn't need all the things the world tells us we need to accomplish His good purposes. When we go, we see that God is at work everywhere and in every way. And when we come back, we live that out. We have the opportunity to live that out in our community. And it is good for our whole church. And it's good for our lives. And it's good for our faith in God. If you're anything like me, it may be that going is part of the healing that you need. Remembering that God doesn't work in an economy of deficits, and whatever you give up to go, or whatever you give up to sponsor, or whatever you give up to commit to pray, whatever you give up, God can replenish. In our economies, we look at if we take something from here, or if we spend something here, it's got to come from somewhere else, and God can do all things in every way and in every place. So as we conclude, I want you to revisit your list of objections. When we're talking about Africa Sunday and we're going to go and we're engaged in all these partnerships, what were the things that came to mind that would prevent you from doing this? Think about those things. Acknowledge them. How real they are, how imposing they are in your life. And then say yes anyways. Trust that maybe, just maybe, God can use you. And maybe, just maybe, if you live compassion that leads to action, you may receive more than you give. And maybe, just maybe, God may surprise you by healing you even as you work to heal others. Pray with me. Heavenly Father, we are grateful to You. We're grateful that You are at work everywhere and in every way. We're grateful You care about the big and small problems in our lives, and the big and small problems in the lives of others. Thank you that you've given this heart, this church, a heart for service. And I pray for every person listening to this message who you will prompt in one way to engage in our global partnerships. I pray that you'll give them the courage to move forward, the peace that they can trust you, and the faith that you can work good through their lives and in their lives. And we pray this all in your holy and precious name. Amen.
Thank you so much for listening with us today. Remember, you can also watch our services on YouTube or at summitchurchfl.org. Those links can be found in the show notes, along with ways to follow us on social media. Now, go in God's grace and peace. We look forward to worshiping with you soon.